apology.
I think there are two acting DDGs who are on their way from the airport, Dr. Narsi and Mrs. Magna.
Oh, and this is what I see, yeah. Other than that, honorable members, our agenda this morning is a briefing by the department on the progress of the finalization of the new CETA. And then, of course, the National Plan for Post-School Education and Training. Let me also say, honorable members, sorry, I should have said this under apologies. The speaker has called for other meetings on the new landscape, not the new landscape, on the, what is this other thing? The panel that was led by former President Motlanthe. I'm going to ask your indulgence to see if we can finish the meeting by 20 past 12 or something, so that those other meetings can be attended also. We'll see, honorable members. We will not take away your oversight responsibility, but let's see if we can manage to do all of that. May I, honorable members, shall we deal with the CETA landscape first? And I almost think the two goes together, and whether we shouldn't let both presentations be done, and then we can engage with all of that. Is that in order? Goed so. Thank you always, honorable members, for your assistance. DG, as I said, welcome back. And we are so happy to see you. Can't believe it. Over to you.
No, thank you very much. Melissa will lead the presentation on skills.
They didn't hear that.
No, thanks, Chair. No, I'm saying Melissa Era will lead the presentation on skills. We'll start with each chair, with your indulgence. Thank you.
Can you proceed?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, and to committee members and to the Minister. The first part of the presentation that we are going to be giving today starts with the National Skills Development Plan, which will be the first part in terms of an overview of the NSDP. And then there will be a second part to the presentation, which is referred to as the CETA landscape itself, in terms of the institutional arrangements. And my colleague, Mr. Lumka, will be doing that part of the presentation. So if I can proceed.
Chair, may I ask that we not go through the section on the Skills Development Plan? We do already know what the Skills Development Plan says. And to me, the much more important part of this, given that we have limited time, is the actual changes that are being proposed. Unless there's new stuff in the development plan that we haven't previously seen. Thank you.
Are you asking that we start, honorable members, on slide 7?
No, I was thinking of slide 20 or somewhere around there, like proposed CETA landscape.
The CETA landscape itself.
Honorable Killian?
Chairperson, I will not lead a protest about it, but I do feel that we actually need the background because we have been dealing with the skills branch for quite some time, and I was actually looking at my first presentation, dated 31st July 2014 this morning. And you know, just to compare where we've made movements and progress, etc. And actually, we would miss out if we don't have the presentation before us. I mean, we will, obviously, the focus will be at the end, but we will miss out on some of the movements, I believe. Thank you, Chair.
So can we find consensus, honourable members? Otherwise, we're going to debate this thing.
Chair, the thing about this presentation is it's extremely thin on what is going to happen to CETA and the CETA landscape, and extremely thick on what we already know. And I'm really worried that our discussion is going to be cut short by hours and hours on the CETA land, on the national development, on the national skills plan, and very little time left for actually discussing the very thin few slides on what is proposed to be changed. Thank you.
So, honourable members, you started off. Can I say, honourable members, let's find each other here. I think there will probably be nothing wrong that we go to that's good to find the middle road. Let's go to slide 10 and then move from there. Madame?
Yes, Chairperson.
You have to speak a bit louder, no? Close to the mic.
I know you've got a
soft voice.
Okay. I'll try to put my short steward voice on. Thank you. So, the dealing with slide 10 specifically and moving forward, these are new aspects that have been embedded into the National Skills Development Plan in terms of the outcomes for the system. There are 8 outcomes that have been included, and it is part of those elements that have been updated after the various consultations. So the first outcome is to identify and increase production of occupations in high demand, and there are sub-outcomes that have been identified based on the underlying problem statement, and these are targets that need to be set for priority occupations, targets for priority qualifications, and an indication of interventions required to improve enrollment and completion within the PSET system. The second outcome is dealing with linking education and the workplace. The sub-outcome identified there is opening up of workplace-based learning opportunities which need to be increased, and the performance indicators have been disaggregated into identifying the performance for the number of learners requiring work-integrated learning that are placed in the labor market, number of TVET lecturers exposed to workplaces, number of learners participating in other various workplace-based learning opportunities such as learnerships, internships, candidacy, and apprenticeships. The third outcome is improving the level of skills in the South African workforce, and this is specifically directed to those employees in the labor market. And the sub-outcome is to increase the number of workers participating in various learning programs from 37%, which is the baseline in 2016, based on the NSDS3 evaluation, to the minimum of 80% of workers participating in various learning programs by 2030. The performance indicator will be measured based on the number of workers who are trained and supported. Then outcome 4 is to increase access to occupationally directed qualifications. And the sub-outcome here is the occupational qualifications that will be developed by the QCTO and to increase access to intermediate and high-level skills, which continues with the basis of focusing on NQF level 4 and above. Performance indicators would be the number of qualifications that are developed by the relevant QC, the number of artisans that will be produced, dedicated grant for artisan development, artisan recognition of prior learning will be prioritized, and partnerships established with various institutions to achieve those indicators. Outcome 5, support the growth of the public college system. The sub-outcome is to support the TVET and the new institutional type of CETC, Community Education and Training Colleges. And the performance indicator is to support centers of specializations, which are currently being rolled out at TVET, and further to support colleges implementing occupational programs and qualifications. The number of learners in workplace-based learning opportunities and lecturers exposed to workplaces based in line with the program offerings of the two institutional types, and the number of skills development support for the local small business and cooperatives as a key indicator. The sixth outcome is the skills development support for entrepreneurship and cooperative development. This is a new key focus area in terms of the outcomes to increase support to entrepreneurial activities and the establishment of new enterprises and cooperatives. And the performance indicators that would be set for the CETAs and the skills institutions is that CETAs identify in their skills planning research processes and establish that have been established and emergent enterprises and cooperatives, and through the research to identify the skills that are needed in terms of addressing the development of enterprises. The number of entrepreneurship and cooperative activities supported by skills levy institutions, that will include the QCTO, CETAs, NSF, and the NSA, and the number of workplace-based learning opportunities that will be created. The second last outcome is to encourage and support worker-initiated training. The performance indicator is that skills levy institutions will work with the trade unions in their sector in identifying the required skills needs, especially to better understand their sectors and implement relevant interventions. Then the eighth outcome, the last one, is to support career development services. And the indicator that has been set is that career development must be accessible, which is underpinned by the principles outlined in the NSDP previously, especially in rural areas and targeted beneficiaries of the National Skills Development Plan and the prioritization of both sectoral and government priorities. So those are the eight outcomes. However, just to go into more detail to deal with the institutional implications and arrangements, the scope of the CETAs will be streamlined in terms of focusing on the understanding the demand and signaling implications for education and training system in terms of supply, steering the system to respond to skills supply, and supporting the development of the institutional capacity of skills providers, and thus performing support system functions and as well as managing the budgets that they receive through the skills levy. The accounting authorities, which has been a key focus of the National Skills Development Plan, has been divided into two key areas of focus in terms of the accounting authority and the executive authority being clearly distinguished as well as that of the department. And this will be dealt with specifically in terms of maintaining stakeholder-driven boards, limiting the size of boards, and also introducing the introduction of an assessor, as we had previously outlined, that will inform the appointment of administrator by the minister when an institution is not performing or delivering. The oversight role will be in line and in accordance with the Public Finance Management Act and the Skills Development Act, as well as the applicable envisaged regulations in terms of governance and executive authority. The planning, reporting, and accountability, is focused on a longer-term planning for the system, and that's aligned to the MTSF and the fiscal allocation. However, in terms of reporting, where an institution or a CETA is not performing, there will be action taken in terms of non-performance, such as clawing back funds that have not been spent. In terms of the funding, the CETA grant regulations will be revised in line with the propositions of the NSDP in terms of the mandatory grant and discretionary grant. And then just lastly, in terms of the National Skills Fund, the focus will be on employed, those in need, and the CET sector and government priority projects. A key institutional arrangement in terms of functional overlap will be in terms of the Quality Council for Trade and Occupations in line with CETAs, where the overlapping quality assurance functions will be clearly distinguished going forward between CETAs and the QCTO. And lastly, social partners will continue to play an active role in terms of the Accounting Authority and the National Skills Authority to implement and monitor and evaluate the NSDP. Chair, I would now like to hand over to my colleague to take over the next part of the presentation.
Thank you, Melissa. Chair, Minister, honorable members and colleagues. I'm going to deal with the last aspect of presentation, which is the proposed CETA landscape. What we're saying here, we're guided by the Section 9 of Skills Development Act and the discussion that we have had at NEDLEC with the social partners, wherein there was an agreement that there is a need to rationalize CETAs. Now, we had to come up with the principles to inform this rationalization, which, amongst others, is value chain and proposition, and viability and sustainability, comprehensive coverage and fit for purpose. We have realized that some of the CETAs, which has got national importance in terms of the income, they don't have the income that could have the national coverage. The example is AgriCETA. Now, those CETAs that we are proposing to be merged, because the proposal is that we must have 15 CETAs now, not 21. And based on the principles that I've outlined, there's a proposition that AgriCETA and Food Beverage CETA should be merged into one CETA. And the purpose of that is that they are dealing with the same related, functions. And we think that that will be of great assistance because, as I have mentioned, AgriCETA is important and the revenue. Now, the other CETAs that are proposed then to be merged are financial CETAs, that is your facet, bank CETA, and your insurance CETA, because they're dealing with finance, and we think that if then, and obviously that proposition as well was sponsored by this portfolio committee, and the other CETA that is proposed for merger is PCETA, local government CETA, energy and water CETA. The coverage of the function of this CETA is more or less the same local government, so that's what we're proposing. And if then you unbundle energy CETA, then electrical contractors will then be moved to construction CETA. And other CETAs, FP&M and fiber and processing also were proposed because those are the manufacturing CETAs. Now, this is just part a proposal which is going to be gazetted either today or tomorrow for public comments. And after 21 days, then we'll see how then the public respond to that. And other CETAs are proposed then to remain the same. Thank you, Chair.
Who's next? But I can tell you we'll reject all of that. Who's next? Oh, Dr. Parker.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Minister. I'm going to do a presentation on a progress report on the development of the National Plan for Post-School Education and Training. The plan isn't complete yet, and all of the aspects that I'll be presenting are proposals at this stage. We will still go through a process of finalizing. The overview of the presentation is there. It just gives an outline of what's in the presentation. Just in terms of the development process, as you know, this process started in 2016, and we've had quite an intensive process to develop a full consultative draft that has been consulted with the system between November 2017 and March 2018. We've had feedback from a number of individuals and institutions. One of the interesting things about feedback is everybody is focused on their area. So we've had very few comments on the whole plan, but very specific comments on different sections. These comments were received and analyzed, and we had a workshop with our minister on the 7th of July where some key policy directives and decisions were made. And we're currently in the process of revising the plan, again, getting it into a format that will be more acceptable, and we hope that we will be able to consult again by the end of September and finalize it for publication at the end of this financial year. The plan format, we have agreed that it should be published in three parts. There will be a high-level plan, very short and succinct, diagrammatic, that will highlight the where we are now and where we want to be by 2030. Then there will be the full plan, which will have articulated strategies and targets for the system, but with limited background and contextual information, because we don't want something that's so huge people don't end up being able to read it. And then there will be a technical report that underpins it, which provides the detailed research references and information about why those choices were made. In terms of the plan and its purpose, it's obviously is about us taking the white paper and turning it into an implementation plan. And that implementation plan, given the time, is really going to be introduced in 2019, and it will be for the 11-year period up to 2030, aligned with the National Development Plan. We obviously have a vision for the system that was identified in the white paper, and that vision is the vision that we hope to ensure is in place by that time, 2030. In terms of the key challenges, there are just two slides which really identify some of the issues that we have to think about. The first one just shows you the sort of attrition of students from grade one going through the system, and those that actually get into universities and complete a degree. This is part of our labour market intelligence data that came out of that process. But I think what's very important here is to see how few actually get into university, and therefore why it's so important that we develop the rest of the system. That we obviously need to have a more effective basic education system. That is a critical aspect that's going to have to be dealt with by education as a whole. And then we have to think about how do we really ramp up other parts of the post-school system to ensure that all of the students in our system get access to opportunities. The next slide just shows you this education and employment statistics for youth between 15 and 34. And it's quite revealing. I see there's just an error there that 6.2 million, the 31%, isn't shown there. Those are the employed. Okay? 6.2 million, 31% of the youth are actually in employment. 8.2 million, that's 42% of the youth, are unemployed and economically inactive. Now, those are usually spread between those who haven't got an interest anymore in looking for employment and those that are looking for actively looking for employment, we put them together in one group so you can really see the size of that cohort of our youth in the 15 to 34 year category. And then the rest are in the post-school system, but you'll see it's only 13% of those youth that are in the post-school system. And of those, the majority are in the university or private higher education sector. So this really is our challenge. How do we provide, over the longer term, sufficient opportunities for all of those people between 15 and 34 and other citizens of the country to become active, economically active and effectively educated and trained to become economically active. So if we look at the structure of the plan, what we try to do is introduce the problem at the beginning and then go through a process of identifying the goals of the plan, what the objectives and outcomes are. And then we look through these various chapters. In 9 chapters, the first 2 chapters very specifically focused on integration of the system and all the cross-cutting aspects that we need to deal with to ensure that we have an integrated and coherent post-school system. We've come from a situation where we didn't really have a post-school system. This is a fairly new concept, so we have to build that. And then we go into looking at how we build and strengthen each of the various subsystems, the community education and training, technical and vocational education and training, and higher education. And what you'll note there is that we haven't said anything about skills development in and of itself, because we've understood that skills are cross-cutting across the entire sector. And so what you've heard about the National Skills Development Plan is embedded and integrated across the whole National Plan for Post-School Education and Training. If we look at the goals, objectives, and outcomes, each of the system goals are identified. They're linked to the white paper. We have the key objective and then outcomes linked to each goal. These still have to be debated and improved on, but this is a focused idea that we have in terms of this. And at the end, where we have the implementable plan, there'll also be the strategies and actual targets linked into this. So for the first goal, to develop an integrated, coordinated post-school education and training system, and I'll talk a little bit more about those outcomes just now. The second goal, to nurture a stronger and more cooperative relationship between post-school education training institutions and the workplace. And really, this is strengthening the meaning of our qualifications to ensure that our graduates are economically active in the future. If we go to goal 3, it's to expand access to post-school opportunities and contribute to building a fair, equitable, non-racial, non-sexist, and democratic South Africa. And this is really about how do we think about the enrollments in the system, how do we create equitable participation, and ensure that we are able to support our students to succeed. Goal 4, to offer post-school education and training that's responsive to the needs of everyone, citizens, employers, in both public and private sectors, as well as broader societal and developmental objectives. And I think from this issue, it's about how do we think about ensuring that we have a diverse range of programs relevant and responsive to all the various communities. So we've identified community needs, the world of work, and research and innovation as the specific areas that we have to be responsive to. And hidden in this are all those issues about ensuring that we have the effective skills, that we deal with the issues of the occupations in high demand, that we focus on issues, new issues that are coming into the system, such as entrepreneurship and the fourth industrial revolution. Goal 5, to improve quality of provision. This is a critical aspect for the system. We have to ensure that as we expand, we don't have a poorer quality. We have to improve the quality where it's not as good as it should be, and where it is already of a reasonable standard, we need to improve it as well. So this is something that goes through the entire plan. To improve success in the system, and this is critical, we believe there's no point in having improved access, increasing the size of the system, without ensuring success. When we talk about developing a single coordinated PSET system, we've done this. I've just got this picture here, which will be improved, but it does show the complexity of what we are attempting to do through this plan. We put at the center of the plan the various institutions that provide skills for the system. And you'll see there we've got the private system, including the skills development providers, the private colleges and higher education institutions, and then we've got all the public institutions in blue. The other colleges are referring to colleges that are part of or governed under other departments, such as the nursing colleges, the agricultural colleges, the police colleges, and so on, because there's a need to ensure that we understand post-school education and training as including all of the opportunities that are out there. We are in a process at the moment with the National Department of Health and with Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries around dealing with the integration of nursing colleges and agricultural colleges into the sector and into higher education and post-school education and training sector, and we do hope that that will be solved relatively soon. What we've tried to do is then identify the key steering mechanisms for the system, which are in the corners of that diagram: funding, planning, and quality assurance. And these three go together to assist with regulating and steering the system and providing oversight of the system. And you'll see there we've identified the various types of institutions. The quality assurance institutions in orange, the supporting institutions in pink, and then other institutions that are linked to funding in green and planning in brown. So we've tried to show these different institutions in the PSET system and how they need to interact with them. And then we have a number of strategic linkages, and those linkages are across our other departments, the Department of Science and Technology, the NRF, Science Councils, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, DTI, Health, DBE, etc. And, of course, workplaces, which we don't have direct control over, but that need to be part of our system. So when we go into this idea of developing a single coordinated PSET system, we've recognized there are a number of things that need to be done, and I'm not going to go through this in detail, but just issue of clarifying and streamlining roles and responsibility and accountability of all those different actors within this system. And it's a critical one. If you think about the HRDC of South Africa, it has a particular kind of role, but what is its role in terms of the PSET system? And how do we streamline that to make it assist with the development of skills for our country? Qualifications, articulation pathways, and quality assurance is an absolutely critical steering issue, and we need to simplify this and improve on what has been put in place over the last 20 years. Integrated planning, we need integrated planning for the system. It's no use having different planning going on for each little sector, and then we don't have an understanding of the entire system. And so here, in particularly infrastructure planning and sharing of resources becomes very important. We are already starting with one pilot of an education precinct that is in the at DUT in Mbali, where we have TVET College, we have the university campus, we have a number of basic education schools, we have a community education and training college, and we have a hospital next door with a sports activity there. So the whole idea of trying to get shared resources within a specific precinct where we utilize our funding in the most effective way. So we've suggested in the plan that there could be three pilots. We've identified three places where this could happen, and if this is possible, we would want to try to look at how we can improve on that. And then there's a student housing infrastructure program, which has to be a program for the system rather than for any particular aspect. And in terms of infrastructure support, that's also a critical aspect. Academic enrollment planning and alignment to government strategic planning imperatives and labor market intelligence is another critical aspect, and that's a critical aspect across all three subsystems. So if we look at all of them, we're trying in the specific chapters to tease out what this means and how that will happen. Then the next one is improving the interface between providers and the world of work, which focuses on all aspects in relation to this. And then there has to be policy and legislation alignment in terms of the changes that we're suggesting. Now, this includes alignment with other legislation that has been developed across the system. One example that we've discovered recently is in the Legal Services Act, where we've got a particular description of public higher education institution, and it's causing difficulty for our graduates coming out of private institutions. So that's the kind of alignment we've got to do. We've got to look at all the acts across which affect post-school education and training, particularly as well in the various, like the Health Professionals Council, statutes and so on, so that we ensure alignment with the new system. Expanding and diversifying the PSET system, this is really focused on the shape, size and provision of PSET. We've got our targets set by the White Paper and NDP, so those are the targets that we are aiming for. And to get there, we have to really understand how we deal with it within all of the institutional types in the provision of post-school education and training. We've identified the Central Application Service to support equitable access as an important aspect of this size and shape and provision, ensuring access into the system, the Career Development Services, to enable students to have informed choices. We need to have affordable student fees and accommodation and a sustainable student financial assistance system. And then we need to have strengthened and purposeful differentiation to ensure the diversity of programs that are required. So all of these things are identified as cross-cutting, and then they're brought into focus in the specific core proposals for each of the sectors. When we've talked to community colleges, again, we're looking at responsive community colleges. So there's a change in focus from what currently the old adult basic education centres, the public education centres, were offering towards skills, occupational programs, community education programs, and so on. Although there will still be a need for general academic programs for those people in communities who want that. So we can see there that what we're working towards is a range of diverse programs really linked into the community, and a whole range of strategies have been identified to enable this. Improve quality of community colleges. And again, for each of these, there are strategies that have been identified. Improved a quality of research on community education and training to assist us to improve and strengthen that subsystem. Well-managed and governed community colleges. This is a critical, critical aspect for the entire system, and we need to identify for each system exactly what kinds of structures and how that needs to be implemented. And the plan proposes a number of different suggestions, strategies for each of these. Well-qualified staff for the system, improved quality assurance capability around the programs for CET, and improved quality of infrastructure. And this, again, particularly for the community education and training colleges, a lot of the infrastructure that they will utilize will be shared infrastructure, but it is agreed that each college must have its own physical infrastructure for administration to enable it to effectively work across the system. So this is something that requires quite a lot of work. There is going to have to be an effective infrastructure audit of the former PLCs to identify which ones are really we're able to take forward, and also to look at what other spaces are available, and particularly partnerships with our other post-school education and training institutions. The focus on achieving success, and this again, I think, is an aspect that goes through every single one of the different subsystem plans in terms of community education and training, but we really have to support students to achieve success in that sector. The next aspect is about TVET colleges, and again, we start with responsiveness, and this is around the enrollment planning aspect and offering of diverse range of programs. We are looking at moving towards occupational programs as the mainstay of TVET colleges, and I think that is the biggest issue that we need to identify here, that colleges cannot continue to offer the same type of ministerial programs into the future, and we have to start moving towards colleges in their locality offering responsive programs to the students that are in those areas. And this means dealing with the issue of centers of specialization, creating niches, and enabling this wide range of different types of occupational, vocational programs to be offered, including higher certificates and advanced certificates at the colleges. The issue of access to workplace opportunities is critical, and we have to also look at this whole issue around simulated workplace experiences where possible to ensure that we have adequacy for qualification. This is also about how do we utilize the new possibilities for IT in terms of simulating experiences. And it's very interesting to see the kinds of possibilities that are out there. In terms of enrollment planning, this is an absolutely critical area of development for the TVET subsystem. This will be the one of the major changes that will come about because of the new plan. And this is based linking the enrollment planning to demand data within the locality of each of the colleges so that we ensure that we have the right kinds of programs offered and the right kinds of skills being developed within the TVET system. Some of the underpinning research on TVET did show that there was often very little connection between what a TVET college was offering and what the need was within a particular area. For example, you would have a college right next to an area where there was masses of tourism, but not a single tourism qualification, but plenty of human, management, HRD type courses. So we have to, that has to change fundamentally, and that's something that the plan will be working on very specifically. The idea that we have PQMs at each institution that are not linked to a national idea, but rather to demand and need within particular localities. The issue also is around how we understand where our college students are going, and the idea, one of the proposals, is that the colleges need to develop tracking systems to track students after they've completed, so that we can really understand what is happening to the college students, where they're going into the workplace, and what are the most effective programs as we go forward. Quality in TVET colleges, another one, and that's quality is one that cuts across every single one of the sectors. The well-managed, governed TVET institutions, again, it's a cross-cutting issue. It's something we've got to unpack in terms of each of the sectors. Well-qualified staff in the system. This is a really important aspect. Obviously, there's the new teacher develop new lecturers, but there's also the issue of focused training for and technical competence for existing lecturers within the system. Improve quality assurance capability, and this is about the capability of the QCTO, but I think also, and it hasn't been highlighted here, but the internal capability of the institution to quality assure what they are doing, and ensuring that they take responsibility for the quality assurance of the particular college. It's an important aspect that hasn't necessarily been developed at this stage, but really needs to go ahead. The improved quality of infrastructure. Fortunately, there is some funding in the TVET system now, but this is an aspect that's cross-cutting as well. But for the colleges, what's being identified are some of the aspects that are important to really focus on. The links to SANREN and the improved connectivity to every single campus, the framework for norms for TVET infrastructure, and the centers of specialization. Improved success, again, this is about student support, ensuring that we have the support and we have a kind of capacity development in the TVET system at the college level to ensure success. Improved exit outcomes to access the world of work. This is a critical aspect because the focus of TVET is all about the world of work and ensuring that the programs that are offered at the TVET college does create access to the world of work. For higher education, again, I'm not going to go through all the details, but it's that issue of offering less responsive programs, a diverse range of programs. They're already there, but to really tweak that and to improve in terms of how this is happening within the system, we need to highlight this issue of community engagement and the institutions being anchor institutions for their communities and their localities, and offering support for the development of TVET colleges and community education and training colleges in their areas. We already have three institutional types within the university system, university colleges and higher education colleges, which have been identified in the new Act but haven't actually been implemented at this stage. So it will be how do we start understanding that and the development of the system around those new types. One of the types of, for example, the higher education colleges, we're looking at the agricultural colleges and nursing colleges becoming higher education colleges within the PSET system. Differentiated according to purpose and range and scope of activity. Three types of universities already exist. These are differentiated in terms of their program differentiation and their program qualification mix. And this will be strengthened and improved through the differentiation framework that is being developed as part of the process and implemented through the plan. When we go on to internationalization, there is the internationalization policy, which is being finalized at the moment and will be implemented as part of the plan. And that includes this issue of foreign scholarships and to ensure that we deal with how we include foreign postgraduate students in public universities in a more effective way to ensure an appropriate balance. Again, it's improving quality, well-managed and governed higher education institutions, well-qualified staff in the system, improved quality assurance capability, improved quality of infrastructure, and for the higher education subsystem, specifically improved quality of research. We have, to a large extent, in the last 20 years, really moved in terms of the quantity of research that is being developed through our higher education institutions, but we really have to now focus on the quality and the meaningfulness of the research that is being produced, and particularly its integration into and development for innovation in the system. So that is one that's here. Funding for postgraduate students, this is something that we have to look at. We have to find ways of improving. Currently, there is insufficient funding for postgraduate students in the system. We've largely dealt with the problem of undergraduate funding, but this is a critical area that we'll have to work with, and we would have to work with DST and the NRF in this regard. Then success in higher education institutions, again, this is a critical one that we're dealing with. Obviously, when we've come to the end of all of this description of the strategies, we have to deal with the issue of financing and resourcing the plan and as we implement what this actually means. We know that the key cost drivers are increased enrollments. So as we increase enrollments, employment of more staff to support the system, staffing is actually the major cost driver. We've seen that across the system. Improvements in qualifications of staff, so as they improve their qualifications, so the cost of staff will go up. Improvements in infrastructure, and that's also why this focus on trying to understand how we can share infrastructure across the system. The increased bed capacity for TVET and universities, that's student accommodation, that's a big cost driver. Systematic provision of student support services across the system. I think there was the other one was this issue of work integrated learning and creating effective platforms for workplace based integrated learning. We do have funding for example, clinical training in for medical students, but in none of the other categories do we have effective funding. We know that the CETAs are assisting in terms of providing workplace-based learning opportunities, but we have to have a more focused way of dealing with this issue and ensuring that we're able to create proper platforms for workplace-based learning that enables the development of skills in the system. As you know, there was a white paper costing exercise done by National Treasury which gave some very scary numbers in terms of costs. I'm not going to read them out too loudly because they are huge, but we also do think that there were some assumptions behind that we may need to re-look at. One of the examples is how do we improve, and I did skip over it earlier, but the utilization of new technologies in the expansion of the system. So we are currently working with National Treasury to re-look at the costing and to see, you know, how that can be dealt with. But what this really also indicates is that when we finance this plan, we're going to have quite a lot of interrogation, negotiation, and engagement across government, but also with the private sector, because it's not something that can be implemented only by government. This is something that requires funding from a variety of different players in the system. The other issue is the skills development levy and ensuring that we have proper joined-up funding. So we utilize that funding that comes from the levies in the most effective ways. The National Skills Development Plan makes a number of proposals around that, but we need to make sure that we create that the platform to deal with that. The issue of sharing other resources becomes absolutely critical, and the sustainable models for financial assistance for students who require support will have to really ensure that as we roll out the new funding for poorer and working class students and we try to look for solutions for other students who left out of the net, we ensure that it's sustainable. The legislative and policy review. So there are a number of strategies that will require these changes. For example, the simplification of the NQF. I haven't said how we're going to try and simplify it. There's a lot of discussion on that at the moment, and we are having a workshop with all the QCs, SACWA, the department, early in September to really thresh out the proposals around this. The clarification of the roles and responsibilities of the QCs and all of the other issues related to the PSET system. And of course, once we've completed this plan and it's been approved, it will have organizational implications for the department, and we will have to do a review of our own internal structure in line with DBSA requirements. Oh, sorry, it's DP, not DB. It's DPSA.
Nothing wrong to be at the money, the door money already. I agree.
it's a typo, but it had something in the background. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think that's the presentation. Did you anything? Let's hand over for questions, and you will come in. Okay. Honourable members, can I ask at this stage, you heard the minister was going to leave. May I limit you to two questions for now? You can come back again so that at least the minister can get a chunk also of some of the questions. If I can redirect your questions also to the minister also, and then we'll take another round because minister will then leave at 11 o'clock. I take it that's agreed, Honourable Van der Westhuizen, and then Bazoli, and then Killian, and I'll take the rest of the hands.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Kikana.
And thank you for the presentation. I think it's become commonplace to say that in South Africa we don't have a lack of plans, and that our challenges have always been with the implementation of those plans. And I do get a little bit of a deja vu feeling when I look at these ambitious plans, and it's good to have ambitions and ambitious plans. My question is first, do you believe that the system, it seems to me that's already been under a lot of stress due to changes, and they couldn't keep up and absorb all these changes, that the system is ready to respond to further changes of expectations? And then secondly, since we're only limited to the two questions now, do you believe that what's been presented here today regarding the CETA landscape will really address the core problems of experienced in our sectoral education and training authorities? What is your analysis of the current problems that they are experiencing, and why they are not making the cost-effective input in upskilling South Africans as one would have expected from them? Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, thank you very much for your long-term plan for higher education. It looks really interesting, but my worry is we actually are facing a lot of short-term, almost emergency problems in higher education. Student protest has now taken a very violent form, which is proving to be extremely destructive. And we have the exodus of vice chancellors. We have a lot of decay of campuses. Is there going to be a short-term plan to try and address these immediate issues, which seem to be threatening the system as a whole anyway, in addition to the short or the long-term plans? Secondly, on the CETAs, in December 2017, the National Skills Development Plan draft was gazetted, and it had six or seven pages on CETAs with a lot of very specific proposals. You know, that there would be shared resources, there would be a central application system, there would be an accounting authority tightening up, there would be changes in the levy structure, and there would be much more emphasis on quality, and there would be changes in the NSF. Now, I don't understand what this presentation does in relation to that. It seems almost insignificant in relation to what the broader ambitions of how the CETA system is supposed to be reformed. So I'm really unhappy with this presentation as given. It really doesn't live up to what we've been led to believe the department is considering. So if you could comment on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to start, I would like to start with just the CETA question. I would like to know what informed the specific regrouping of the CETAs and whether the department has actually been able to track the success rates against the National Development Plan and our sort of targets set there. I am equally concerned that we are very good planning and replanning and reconfiguring. But every time that we run into a problem area and not delivering, then we want to reconfigure everything. So I really have to raise that issue. Second point, and that relates to the PSET plan. I would also like to know whether the proposed PSET plan is deriving its basis and its reason for being from the National Development Plan. We've had an excellent commission developing the National Development Plan. To what extent has that informed the PSET plan? And you have spoken about a simplification of the National Qualifications Framework, which would be welcomed. I'm concerned because, you know, Chairperson, this morning I was having a look at all the reports that we're writing, the skills for SIP planning, you know, strategic infrastructure programs, et cetera, et cetera. Where are we? I mean, where are the deliverables? How do we track success to make sure that when we reconfigure, we actually reconfigure to beef up the performance? So please, if I could have feedback on that. Thank you.
Sekana?
Chair, our questions look like they are more or less the same. We just worry that, take for example the word integrated learning. I suppose that is apprenticeship, journeyman, when the first revolution started, the industrial revolution, and it worked, they succeeded in the first world countries. Why is it failing here in South Africa, even after 20 years? I mean, wherever we go, when we do our oversight, students complain that they are not getting practicals. Not from government in parastatal or 3 tiers of government, not from private sector. They say they are just put in class and bombarded with theory, and they think TVS by nature should be practical. This leads to the second question. We can see that we are, in a sense, overloaded with these changes, and we're trying to find ourselves and practicalize all these changes. The question is, we've been tampering with the training of nurses because at one stage we wanted to train them at university. This is workplace, workplace type of training that must take place. When colleges, the infrastructure is there, colleges and accommodation are at hospitals. And during the day, they go to college and walk to the ward for the rest of the day. So why do you want to change it? I hope you don't change that system and think you can build new colleges outside hospitals, because that has failed and it will still fail. So my question is it not possible to let health be in charge of nurses, because they generate their own tutors there and they were training very successfully on the job training? Won't we allow them to continue that until we are ready to take over that type of responsibility? For now, I just think we've disturbed it a lot, and we shouldn't disturb it further. Let health do it until we are ready to take it over. Agriculture, don't mind. It can be done under our post-school education. But for health, I thought, let's rather have the system that is there continue until we are ready.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentations. I'm interested in the NSD plan outcomes, especially outcome one, where it speaks about the occupation in high demand. I want to know whether the department has evaluated the impact of publication of the list of occupations in high demand in relation to the demand, in relation to the program offerings in line with skills identified, and also whether is there evidence that higher education institutions and TVET colleges are offering these qualifications. Lastly, whether the department has assessed the longevity of these skills and occupations, given that the fourth industrial revolution is upon us. Chair, on CITAS, we can see that there is a difference if you look at what was presented to us last time, and the committee proposals, we must be honest, they have been taken into consideration. But what has been presented to us now is just the clustering or the grouping of the seekers, yes. So I just wanted to know, because we can make proposals as just members, whether there was any feasibility study conducted to determine viability of the ideas that we had or the proposals. Lastly, what gaps have been identified with regard to placing...
Yeah, don't hop to number three, Honourable Member.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I said two questions, not 2A and 2B. Any other member? Yes. Good try. Very skillful. It doesn't look like there's any other member. Just very quickly from myself, Minister, there's a very interesting section, in the NDP that talks about the fact that whatever we do, there needs to be consensus in education. Now, everything that you are proposing here and have gone through, does it incorporate this thing that we've got to find consensus in South Africa as far as education is concerned? And then on the CITAS, we obviously welcome you know, some of the suggestions that we have made on the CETAs, but we think the process is not a process of just linking them and lumping them together. We want to find out, are they informed by the current economic situation in South Africa? Are they informed by the current socio-economic problems in the country? Because if we have a sense that, look, we're tired of this one and that one, that's just, that's not going to take us anywhere. It's not informed by... In fact, if you take the CETA presentation and you put it together with a presentation that Dr. Parker has just done, let's be honest to say whether they speak to each other and whether they will form part of that. That's the question from my side. Minister, at this point, I'm going to ask you to respond and welcome Deputy Minister also. May we say, Minister, you're doing a real sacrifice here today by being here. Eid Mubarak.
Chairperson, and Eid Mubarak to all our Muslim brothers and sisters. Thank you to the colleagues for the questions. I will ask the Deputy Minister to speak to the work integrated learning, because he's been very involved in that area. Chair, I agree with Honourable Van der Westhuizen that we need to be very careful about loads of plans which look very good, but actually we haven't looked definitively at the system and where we actually can exert support or pressure in order to get the outcomes that we desire. I do think one of the things that is missing from our presentations, all that those that we have done today, is the utilization of research. Because I don't know how you achieve some of the goals we've referred to without using your research institutions to help to inform the actual concrete plans that you will implement. So one of the things we will add to future presentations is ensuring that appropriate research capacity on skills and institutional development is both supported and utilized by the department. I think when one looks, Honorable Van der Westhuizen, at the post-secondary system, I believe that the university sector, yes, is ready and could support us in some of the plans that we have. But I believe far more support work and capacity development is necessary for the TVET college sector and the community education and training. These are very ambitious goals, and by no means are those two sectors absolutely ready for what we intend. Hence our decision that we will approach this on the basis of pilots. So we become, I think, better at identifying colleges where there is capacity that we can build on and that we can utilize in order to implement initial interventions, and then, should we succeed, move to massifying. I think the centers of specialization are an excellent example that we're going to draw on as the years proceed. So what my department is saying is not that all of this will be done next year, but it's certainly saying we have a sense from years of review of what needs to happen, and we're going to incrementally work at ensuring that we implement. The team will tell you that one of the things I've said to them is that this is a broad plan. What I now need are phases indicating over the next 5 years this is what will happen, and in 10 and so on. So we're going to move into that level of detail, and we're going to avoid the dustbin approach, which has developed a whole lot of policies, then it doesn't quite work, you develop more, and you don't quite repeal or get rid of, you just keep adding and adding, and you have a very convoluted system that doesn't work in terms of what you want. On the CETA landscape, I have said to the department we need to think more carefully, because I think mergers are not the solution to the challenges that are confronting us. So I do think that what is presented doesn't quite address the challenges that we're confronted with in the CETA sector. I think there's serious problems of governance, there's poor regulation, there's too much independence with determining use of funding, there need to be clearer rules, and I also think the processes of appointment, I mean, at the moment, the new boards are getting rid of the good CEOs because our rules almost suggest you must appoint a new person rather than, you know, saying even the incumbents can apply. So you've introduced a very toxic environment in the way that the rules and regulations are framed. And this is something that we would have to attend to. In terms of impact on skills by the CETAs, again, I think the workplace relationship or the employer relationship and the institutions has not been as, I think, effective as it could be. If one looks at some of the CETAs where perhaps there is impact, it's where there's been a very strong role of the private sector. So your finance CETAs have done quite well. Your wholesale and retail, you are beginning to see impact. Manufacturing and energy. So there are some that are doing well because of a very strong relationship with the employing sector. But in many, there's a very tenuous relationship and I think a poor skills planning ability. So there's a whole, I think, lot of rethinking and rearrangement that we need to do. I also think it would be a misconception to believe that the agri-CETA and the food and beverages are equivalent and can be merged. I'm not a person who believes necessarily that mergers solve all your problems. I don't think they do. There are other aspects of regulation which may more adequately address the challenges that you're confronted with. So I am nervous because once you say we're going to merge, then you start to put things that don't quite work together, and you then have a really, really problematic situation, and you will not address the sectoral skills needs that may need attention. So even let me assure Honorable Kekana that with respect to the colleges and how they're dealt with, the professional colleges, we are not about empire building, not at all. What we must look to is ensuring appropriate skills and the administrative and policy capacity to oversee the colleges delivering the skills that the country needs. And for some of the sectoral colleges, at the moment, they're in very, very dire straits and need to be rescued. And so it will be on a considered basis that we declare some of them higher education colleges, and always it will be with the full participation of stakeholders. I would be averse to taking on a responsibility such as we did with colleges without proper finance shift. So if the policy is incomplete, we will not assume responsibility. And so we're fairly determined on that. Well, I think, Professor Bozzoli, we have a real difficulty with the current context in higher education. And to some degree, all of us as adults must accept responsibility because I think we weren't as articulate and forceful as we should have been when violence ensued. And it's become a standard culture, I'm afraid. I get threatening letters almost every week that if you don't do this, we will do that. You know, and it's the form of engagement to the degree that one even feels, should I go into a public engagement with particular constituencies? So I do think there's a culture we've allowed to be created that we need to confront and hopefully reverse. But the leadership in higher education will have to play a very important role in that regard. It's not going to be done from the department alone or the ministry. Institutions will have to, I think, lead in creating a new ethos and culture in institutions. And you see, with the departure of vice-chancellors, it's not really only about protests or about student conduct. It's many other things. I mean, I get letters from vice-chancellors about being threatened because of the infrastructure funding, that you are being told you give it to this BEE group, that contract, and if you don't, we will see you and your family and so on. And we've had to provide security to some of the vice-chancellors. And in the end, when a professional who's prized in the world feels that this is really enough, you know, it's not what I signed on for, they do decide to depart our shores. And we're going to see that more and more. There are all sorts of groups, Northern Cape Black Business Group, threatening the vice-chancellor at Salt Plateau University, saying 50% of infrastructure funding must come to us. If it doesn't, we will see you and your family, etc. So there's all of this going on, and it's a whole milieu in South Africa of violence, threat, and intimidation that I think we need to address. On infrastructure, I would say we're beginning, through investments we're making on infrastructure in the last few years and in this year in particular, we are seeing positive developments. I'm actually meeting quite a few vice-chancellors who are wanting to present their infrastructure plans to us. So the maintenance and development of new infrastructure is happening on our campuses, but again, we want our students to really ensure that they would prize and protect that infrastructure. The final thing I want to say about the context of our institutions, and particularly universities, is I have, and I'm sure members of the committee would also be fairly disturbed about the allegations of racism that black academic staff are informing us about. And I think the committee needs to take a deeper look at what's happening. Because if senior black academics are feeling so alienated and uncomfortable in institutions they sign on to, it means we have a very deep problem of racism that we should not ignore as members of parliament. It is something I will be following up, but I think the committee needs to invite academics and start to find out what is going on. I'm getting accusations about deans and how they deal with young black researchers and so on, and real discomfort, and I think it's something we should not neglect, because we want to build young women and black academics and have them in the academy, and we need to support them in creating an appropriate climate. On the CETAs, I think made the point that I do think we haven't yet gone far enough. We will look at those proposals again. I had suggested to the department, don't say much about CETAs because I have thoughts, but they needed to make the presentation to yourself, so they've come with what is still thinking and not quite fully formed final ideas. So I think, Honorable Killian, they were trying to develop a model, and it's really not what I think we should have. So we will be relooking at whether we are responding appropriately with respect to CETAs. What we will do once we have concretized the proposed shape and changes is we will publish and allow for public comment on what is proposed. But I think it has to be a definitive set of proposals with a clear indication that there will be some changes. We just cannot carry on. You know, you can't have a CEO of a CETA receiving nominations and then deciding which ones to forward to the department. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. So there are a whole host of things that would have to change, and we will come back to the committee once we're at a more clear point as to how we wish to go. On the NDP goals, I think much of what we do derives from the National Development Plan. We're very clear on that. It is the standard for us, and we draw on it. We have said that some of its targets are going to be very difficult for us to achieve because they are very ambitious targets, and I think there were assumptions on resources that have not been realized in the reality of the past few years. And so we might need to go back to the National Planning Commission and just say, should we be rethinking, or is there a way in which you might have government give us improved resource support? I also think that the point that Dr. Parker made about technology is really important. I've been very concerned that, for example, the University of South Africa has somewhat departed from its core obligation, which is distance education, and which should be a far broader access than is currently the case. But they have been facing a pressure of young people accessing the institution and wanting more contact type relationships. And it's something I've said to the Vice Chancellor, no, you've just got to be a distance institution and provide excellent e-learning opportunities. And we will, you know, support you in that regard, because that will help us then to begin some form of massification, but with excellent use of technology. And I don't think we've gone far enough in that area, but I am challenging him, and he's promised to come back, the Vice-Chancellor, on that. I think he found our meeting very peculiar. But anyway, we will look at that, because I think it's something that must happen. I don't think we're over-planning. We're thinking quite carefully on how we approach the ambitions that are in the white paper, and it does direct us to develop this national plan, and so it's something we do have to do. What I do think we need to become better at is linking in to what other departments are doing. So, for example, on the number of PhDs, the Science and Technology Department has already made some program advances and some policy adjustments. We would need to look into that and look at how we together are achieving those particular goals of the National Development Plan. Mr. Kikana, the Deputy Minister, will address the work integrated learning, and we are trying with a focus on occupation and trades to move away from this theory. We do think that you are absolutely correct that the interpretation of the NCV was more theory rather than greater practical, and we have to change that approach to our artisan training programs. And I think the greater collaboration now with the QCTO and the focus on artisans and artisan training is an important shift, and this Centers of Specialization signal that move much more toward occupation and trades. And I must say, honorable members, one of the things I've noted as we move into these centers of specialization and a greater focus on occupations and trades, our partners internationally are keen to assist our TVET sector, because this is what they understand TVET sectors do. And so you're seeing greater interest from our colleagues in South Korea, Germany, in the UK. We're getting really exciting partnerships and collaboration, because the direction in which we're going is where technical and vocational education should be. I agree, and Dr. Motsoaledi would agree, Honorable Kekana, that the best way to train the nurse is practical, and they must be receiving that little subsistence, but be at the bedside. We have too many of our nurses who actually don't believe they should touch a bedpan because it's beyond what a graduate nurse should do. I don't think it's wrong for nurses to have graduate ambitions, but they must have that training which makes them really good staff nurses. And I believe that Minister Motsoaledi is keen that we see this kind of change. Finally, Ms. Honorable Mchunu, I do think that we have to make better use of the data that we develop and publish. I'm not sure that when we have the occupations for high demand lists or the scarce skills lists of Home Affairs, whether we say, listen, in 3 years there must be enough welders in South Africa, and that we can do it in the following way. I suspect we publish the data in order for the data to be there, which for me is a very weird use of data. So we have agreed that we're now going to try and use information and data in order to inform our programs, and in particular that the prevalence and pervasiveness of technology, as implied by the concept Fourth Industrial Revolution, is something that should influence the programs that we develop. And we're working as joint chairs of the Fourth Industrial Revolution Committee of Government of the Cabinet in order to develop appropriate responses by government in this area. And I've answered, I think, the question on CETAs. On consensus, Chairperson, let me say something I believe in very deeply, particularly with respect to our university sector. We've got to achieve these high levels of consensus and social compact as aspired to by the National Development Plan. But we're not necessarily good at it. I had a meeting yesterday with Nehao, which almost became a shouting match, unfortunately. And I don't think we necessarily were in the wrong. I think it's just perhaps misunderstanding. And proves again that we all need to find better ways of engaging with each other and ensuring that from step to step we understand what our particular intentions are. So we have, in developing the plan, for example, been engaged with stakeholders throughout. I know that of the organizations in the sector, they've played a very definitive role in commenting on the proposals. I'm not quite sure as to what role the unions in our institutions might have played, and that is something we perhaps would have to look at. But I think consensus building is absolutely imperative, because my department cannot do what the country needs to do in terms of skills without partnerships. It's just going to be impossible. Right, and my answer to your second question would be no, not enough has been taken into account in proposing the new landscape for CETAs, and we will certainly go back and relook at this and come back to the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Now, there's a collective responsibility for cabinet decisions. I always like to be there because I don't like to be collective responsible for that which I do not know. So if I could be allowed to.
There's something called I won't explain how we take decisions in the ANC, and then all of us must be bound by it. I won't explain it here. Yeah, I would. Honourable members, you would agree that the minister will take leave now, and that we thank her very much for coming to the meeting. We are blessed that the deputy minister is still here. And I'm sure he will also answer some of the questions. But what I want to do is, Deputy Minister, why don't we ask you just to wait, then we take the next round, and then you might as well answer all of that. Is that in order? Okay. Thank you very much again, Minister. The second round of questions, honourable members. Minister, it seems you've answered everything. The meeting is ending now. Honourable van der Westhuizen again. Anything, Honourable Bolmerans, number two. And we'll go along. Three, Honourable Kekana. Go for it, Honourable van der Westhuizen.
Thank you, Chairperson, and may I first congratulate the Deputy Minister on successfully completing the Congress Marathon. I think that is really, I'm in awe of your achievement there, sir. Chair, I want to come back to my point earlier regarding the, I think what is generally perceived as the underperformance of CETAs. And The minister has said, and I think we can all concur, that CETAs work best when the relationship with the private sector is tight and good. But we know we also have some CETAs where the private sector is quite diverse. If I think, for example, of certain sectors, agricultural CETA, for example, then you have a lot of different employers. In some industries, we have two or three or four big employers. The minister has referred to, for example, the banking sector. We've got some strong role players, and it's easy to forge relationships with only those few. But my question is still, what do you believe to be the core problem in that we do not see employer organizations, employers, with the help of the CETA, investing enough in the training of their staff? What, if you could just tell us what is your analysis, because I always believe that once you understand a problem, then you can start working towards solving that problem. And I'm not clear, what do you see as the real problem? Thank you.
Thanks. Chair, mine is a follow-up, but also on the page 22, I mean on slide 22 of the NSDP presentation, you have the proposed CETA landscape, which deals with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to CETA number 5. That's where the changes are mute, and the rest of the CETAs are unchanged. The question and the answer that the minister has given is to the to some extent closes the matter that it is still going to be processed. But the presentation was saying we are ready to do a gazette or a publication in a day or two. Would that be put on break in terms of us discussing it further? The other reason why it was put across in this way was the dysfunctionality of some CETAs and trying to maybe match them so that there can be much functionality or usage of resources. In that, the inclusion of a plan to actually deal with the capacitation of the other CETAs and what work would have to be done there. That would be my comment on that matter.
Can I go ahead, Chair? Dr. Parker, when you spoke about TVET, you said something that is very important, that whatever the programs at the TVET and whatever the curriculum, it must be driven by the needs of the local communities. And that is very impressive there on paper, because when you go out, the opposite is happening. I can quote three colleges, Jabulani in Soweto, Mokopane in Limpopo, Sekhukhune in Limpopo. When, for example, Mokopane, there's an old teachers' college which has been empty ever since teachers' colleges were closed, I think 20 years now. Just sitting there, it could have been converted into a TVET college because the TVET college that is there is very good. It is well facilitated, and you can see teachers, both black and white, are actually committed. It is linked in agriculture to the University of the North. Some of the research for agriculture is done at the University of the North, and it feeds back onto the college. So agriculture is very impressive. But there's this hotel hospitality, where they teach waiters and baking cakes for hotels. And I thought, and that is their major program, actually, at that college. And I thought the college is surrounded by villages and communities all around, and actually they could do construction there, builders, plumbers, electricians, because there's water and electricity, even in villages, road construction. They could produce a whole construction program there and employ a lot of youth there, including mechanics, because there are many cars there. So you then wonder, this program that says it focuses on local needs, why now? I mean, I'm sure it's only 1% of the population there that sleeps in hotels. Why is hotel hospitality the main program, when there are other programs that the TVET can do? So this applies to Skukuni when we went there. This applied to Jabulani in Soweto, because Jabulani has been there the longest technical college, but it is technical in name because the workshop is not functional. There are old machines there. It has closed down. Those that have means go in and vandalize it. So I'm just saying, how do you monitor that this program of local needs driving the curriculum that determines that is determined at the college is implemented? Because otherwise your papers all the time are very good, but you go out, you get surprised because the opposite of what you write in your papers is happening.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just wanted to ask, the NSDP institutional arrangements page, slide 18. It has been our experience, I think there has been sort of slight improvement, and then in some respects some of the sectors deteriorated again as far as governance, and, you know, just when we see the light, it is a train coming. And it's not the new dawn. But just clarity, you speak of envisaged regulations. Do you envisage new regulations? Does it mean that you have current regulations to determine your oversight role over the CETAs? Because we know that in the past there were some instances where some of these boards actually challenged the department, but also took it on in court, etc. So to what extent is that a thing of the past? And secondly, Chairperson, just if we look at the scope of CETAs and the first block, we're speaking of steering the system to respond to skill supply, etc. Now, SOEs are also skills providers. To what extent do you have, or is this the role of the National Skills Authority to monitor the output of artisan training, etc.? Where is the responsibility located, so that we know exactly? Is the system, and if we speak of the system, it's not only the higher education, it's also the other entities in this sector. Can you please just indicate to us, where do you keep the information that determines what is the output? Thank you.
I don't see any other hands. The question that Honourable Vulnerance is asking, may I also ask DG, what is the rush to want to gazette what you have here on the CETAs? Don't you think there's value in rather rethinking a little bit? We also don't want to cause any unnecessary consternation and anxiety out there. You know, when you put something that says change, human beings respond.
sometimes in a manner that we can actually avoid also. So maybe tell us why, what is the rush in the light of the discussion here to go and... But let me remind you also that you have the energy and water sita under two different categories. It's twice. And then also, what you are not explaining to us here is, you know, other than saying, let's put the following, you're not saying to us, Deputy Minister, inside of the current sitas, we don't understand why you wouldn't want to say to us that even in whatever sita, you know, the one that I remember well is the one that does coffins. I couldn't understand why the services sita would be doing coffins. And then we found somebody else that's also doing coffins. I mean, it's really a weird example that I'm using, but I'm just telling you that is the, you know, the craziness of it. We are more comfortable that you tell us that you have looked inside of the sitas also, and the way that they are configured is the first problem that you have, other than the finance sita, which we really agree with yourself. And we think that helps it more to tell us. So if you land up and to come and tell the committee, you're only going to have six sitas. It is based on, not because you are married to six or you're married to the current and so on. So if you can, I want to certainly, you know, on the seventh one, the safety and security sita, I serve on the Magistrates Commission, so we deal with training, JWASA and all of it. They couldn't understand why they are lumped into, as the judiciary, into that sita that is really not functioning. Now it hampers them that they can't, and so it's an example of what I'm saying. If you look inside, why are you not telling us that? Honourable members, I want to put to yourselves that I think we must agree. When I looked at those pictures, Deputy Minister, of might be outside of the 2 points on the agenda. If we look at those pictures of Mpumalanga, I don't understand what relationship the picture has with the issues that they are raising. It just absolutely doesn't make sense if you say that we are unhappy with corruption at the institution. And you then do the kind of things that you have seen. And honourable members, I want you to agree that we must say as a committee, we continue to call for dialogue, and that we continue to call for the department to investigate more and more procedural mechanisms at all these institutions that lend itself to the fact that they have an avenue that they can vent their issues to. Sometimes it is true that they are not allowed to, you know, the IF is not functioning where they're supposed to be discussing. You have told us in other meetings that is true. We think it would be amiss of us to absolutely say nothing and do nothing, but look at the bigger problem, and that is we are a country of, the way my sister says, why are we burning? Another train is burned. You can't move. And so it carries on. I'm calling that we must resolve today to say that the department must take it upon themselves also, DG, that it introduces to all the institutions far wider mechanisms. The Labor Relations Act gives us a lot of those things that can actually be introduced. To do that, we cannot have the untenable situation that we are having at the moment on how we articulate dissatisfaction. That doesn't mean people don't have rights in the country. Deputy Minister, let me hand over to yourself, and I take it those are the end of the questions. Honourable members, there will just be one issue left on the agenda that we have to deal with as a committee.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. My apologies for getting in late, and I think it's probably been unfair that the difficult questions are asked when the minister is gone. I'll just take a couple of questions and then the DG will take some. And I want to start with the work integrated learning question that Honorable Kekana raised. We are obviously concerned at the extent within which the private sector has been taking up and hosting learners for them to be able to complete the practical component of their training. There are obviously various interventions, one being building institutional capacity so that institutions are able to, simulate the workplace. Then there's the centers of specialization, and then there is the youth employment service, which we also want to use as part of the campaign to get learners integrated into workplaces as part of learning. And then there is the work that some of the CETAs are doing. There's also the work that some of the institutions are doing as part of their partnerships with industry to place learners in workplaces as part of their learning. So there is work and there is drive, and our intention obviously is to ensure that we integrate all of this work that's got to do with will. Just about I think in July last month, we entered into a memorandum of understanding, for instance, with the Gauteng Provincial Government, Department of Infrastructure Development, where we will see some of the EPWP participants being given opportunities in TVET colleges, but also where they will place graduates from TVET colleges in their workplaces, and also with companies whom they have a partnership with. And we really want to see how this, how far this go, because we think that it would be a good pilot, to expand it on a national scale, because we think it's a very good example around workplace integrated learning and the work, intergovernmental relations, and also relations with the private sector. I fully agree with Honorable Kekana that we need to see more and more of the occupational trades programs being offered by our TVET colleges through the National Skills Fund. I think more than 2 billion rand is allocated to TVET colleges to drive those training programs, be it in, short courses in welding, in electricians, electronics, mechanics, and all of that. And I think it's also about the capacity of the institutions to be able to provide those programs. So both our TVET colleges and I think the minister's keen passion to see CET institutions also driving the occupational trades and programs. So I fully agree with that, and I think that's one of the things that we really want to see. The specific campus that you're talking about, which is the there's Jabulani and then there's Mokopane. Mokopane is it's being used by the Department of Basic Education in Limpopo to train teachers in IT. And the Waterbeck College have essentially been in discussions with the Waterbeck TVET College have been in discussion with the department to let them use a section of that college, which is not being used. I think it's MASTEC, that's what it's called now, to use a section of that college. So there are discussions along those lines. So I think it's one of the things that we're trying to get the college to be able to use that facility. So I also fully agree with you with regards to that. And then the issue around the CTAS, I think the point Honorable Van der Westhuizen has embraced around CTAS and the role of the private sector, I think that's a very crucial point. And probably our interest would be to see all of the stakeholders involved in the full operation of the CTAS. And I mean, in instances where you've got you know, a lot of employers, as you've indicated, in the agricultural sector, for instance, and you know, in a whole range of other sectors, that's where, as you know, we indicate that you obviously experience a lot of challenges. But I think the interest is to see all the sectors involved, actively involved, and contributing, you know, in ensuring that we have, especially worker education. I think if you've seen that one of the things that we've identified in the NSDP is the question of worker-initiated and workplace-initiated training. And in those instances, you know, where you see more and more of the private sector taking a keen interest on the work of the CETA, we see the output actually being much, much higher. The issue around, I think, what the minister said around the measures, and I think the point that she was making is that, you know, this would happen upon taking into consideration the points that are being raised and the fears and all of that. So I think that's the point. And I think that those have been taken into consideration, that the process would then, you know, unfold. I think the emphasis was essentially on that, taking into consideration the points that the committee is raising. DG?
No, thank you very much, DM. Firstly, perhaps the question of regulations or legislations thereof is always undertaken with a view of, one, strengthening oversight as well as the efficiency and effectiveness of the system, and also ensuring the tightening up of accountability that would improve performance and optimal use of resources so that we can be able to get value for money, you know, out of it. So it's considered within that context of how best could we support and position the system in a manner that would be quite responsive to the needs of society across. So it's not something that in the main is punitive, you know, in approach, if it could be understood in that way, Honorable Member Gillian. Now, we're talking of colleges being responsive to the needs of communities within which they are located, industry at large as well. But it's a matter that, in terms of programs, we would need to underpin true rigorous research and engagement with institutions in order to undertake as to what kind then of support linkages as well as the opportunities that would be unblocked in the process in order to give effect to that. And of course, it would require a lot of advocacy as well as training of staff as well as communities to understand that these facilities are at their disposal for their use as communities, and therefore their support and engagement with them is quite important in a manner that would enable them also to determine as to how best could they be fulfilling that role. But of course, there's a lot of work that we are doing in the department, in the system, in order to build that capacity informed by research and the programs that we need to roll out as a department. And it's a matter that we are engaged in through quite laborious processes of engagement. The minister spoke about how we are approaching the question of occupations in high demand. We get to this arrangement through quite extensive consultations, engagement with various stakeholders, and underpinned by research, even from our institutions as well. But we are doing this with a view of having published this list of occupations in high demand. We then monitor how the list is being used, and of course we'll evaluate outcomes over time and undertake quite intense processes of trend analysis so that we can be able to assess the impact in which they make in respect to skills provision in the country. We are talking of the gazetting. I think the most important thing here that perhaps we need to understand and take up, which the minister raised, there has been quite a number of engagements, including with this committee, which raised quite a number of views, issues around the question of sitters. And other stakeholders, of course. But the main purpose is how can we make this system quite effective and have an impact in the role, in fulfilling its role as well as the mandate. Now, the gazetting which is spoken about, it's an exercise that would enable the public and various stakeholders to actually engage with a trend of thoughts that are coming up around this issue. But it's a matter which is going to be finalized based on the cost-benefit analysis, research, determination of viability of what could end up being the final proposal, of which that would be coming, of course, to the portfolio committee as well, that out of these public engagements and responses, this is what is shaping up, and what then would be the thinking of the minister, having been informed by a very thorough cost-benefit analysis, feasibility study, and research work that needs to underpin whatever proposal that would emerge at the end. And it's going to be presented here. And I think as this portfolio committee, you will have a final say in advising or making some determinations for the consideration of the minister. That is the process in which this matter is going to unfold towards. It's not the conclusion of it. I think I'm explaining it quite correctly for what it is. Now, this question of some instability in the system, which is manifesting itself in really ugly activities that we see. I think the minister explained this area. There are quite a number of interests that has actually engulfed our institutions. Entitlement, high levels of ill discipline. I think it would be perhaps incumbent upon this committee to actually look at this closely as to whether some of the things that are happening at the present moment are not bordering on counter-revolution with a lack of a better word. Because what is happening is really quite destructive in the institutions. The extent of greed, ugly things happening with such impunity, which seeks to defeat what the public is supposed to be benefiting from, is quite alarming. And I don't think it's a matter that, as a department, we would be able to address. It requires this portfolio committee, and it requires the country to actually stand up and address this phenomenon, which is quite new in the system. It's really threatening the system. If you can look at what is happening at Sfako Makgato Health Institution, and these things in the main are more about the tenders that we want this to go to this person, we want this to go to this person, and it's unending. To have this manifesting and taking place in institutions of higher learning, institutions of training, I think is scary. It's reason enough that I think the portfolio committee has to stand up and confront what is happening. It's always close under somewhat good name, but the way it is happening is really destroying our institution. I never thought in the practices of this system you would have to mount such a security for vice chancellors, senior managers in these institutions, because they are seriously threatened with life, and there is no way in which they can be there just by themselves. You have to spend money on security. If you can look at the budget just of security in the system, it's too huge to contemplate. Just for normal functioning, apart from what we are talking about at the present moment, it's money you feel that if things were normal, it could be utilized for quite a productive use. But you can't ignore when all sorts of things are happening on campuses, rapes, murders. So you have to get into things that were really not part of the institutions in their conception. But as the time goes on, you must have everything. It's almost like having a police station, within a university. Because you can't do without that huge security presence in each and every campus. It's not in one place. And it's costing quite a lot, a fortune, from these institutions. It's money that could be utilized for enhancing training, research, and other related activities in these institutions, but it would have to be diverted to security, because those who are in there are a risk to themselves. There are also external risks that are coming in. All sorts of things are happening. So, Chair, the issues that you are raising are quite mouthful, and we'll actually make a follow-up to all of them. But I think we are really appealing for your support to come into the party. This thing is killing the system. It's happening everywhere. It has become a norm.
in the life of these institutions across, whether it's a TVET college, whether it's a university, it's there. And in CETAs, some of them, they are at each other's throat. It's about material interests. That's why regulations and other mechanisms, despite the advances and improvement that we are seeing in the system, but there are still worrying areas that require attention. No, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG and Deputy Minister. I take it, DDG Mbalo, you are covered on the questions. DDG Parker, anything? Anyone else? Tivit? No? It seems like they've all answered. I see two hands, Honorable Bazoli and Kekana, and then that's the last.
Chair, I think the committee needs to respond to the DG's challenge, which is basically that the institutions in higher education are being, as he said, destroyed by what's going on there. And I'm afraid I don't agree with you, Chair, that consensus building is necessarily going to solve these problems. They are now so deep, and they are now headed by such ruthless people that calling them in to consult and debate is not going to work. Many of them are actually criminals, and many of these actions are actions of criminals, death threats, threats against families, forcing people to accept them as tenderers for contracts, burning down buildings. These are criminal acts, and one doesn't necessarily sit down and chat to the criminal. So I would like to have some sort of conversation about how one addresses these issues. I don't have the answer. But I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't get the Committee on Police to discuss it with us or some other body that is able to talk to us about how one addresses criminality that is now embedding itself deeply in these institutions. And we've seen it ourselves. At Walter Sisulu, we actually saw criminals in the rooms of the students running illegal drug enterprise, drug selling. We've seen criminality, and from what the DG says, it's more widespread even than we can imagine. And the minister supports this as well, saying that vice chancellors are being driven out of the country by the kinds of experiences they are having. So we're in a very serious situation, and going on about lovely policies that are going to cost 600 billion rand in 2030, while the system is actually at risk, seems to me to be a problem. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, just in the same breath, I wanted to say, when we've got 42% of our youth unemployed, you look at it, the whole social engineering, the whole social construction is kind of collapsing, because if so many youth are with energy and vitality in life, instead of being productive, instead of getting income, they are there. We see them in the townships. Some of them go to Nyaupe drugs. This is bound to produce juvenile delinquency and social maladjustment. So the big challenge is we are the institution, we actually are the sector of government that must socially engineer a society that can be employed, that can have a future, that can, because ultimately they have children. And when all this rigmarole happens, it is bound to backfire on us very seriously. So the picture, I can tell you the police are no more coping because of petty crime and all kind of crimes surrounding them. So we fundamentally need to socially reconstruct our society and make sure people can be employed. We produce these artisans, we produce at full capacity. And I'm sure then we'll normalize. Otherwise, there's no any other way. We can pray, fill up churches. We can employ policemen. They'll never cope because we're just producing a wrong society. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, I would like to align myself to the call by the DG that we should engage on this matter further. I think what we underestimate is the extent of capturing of institutions, and that we underestimate the practices that have become common practice at institutions, where people, because I hear what Honorable Kakana is saying about the poverty levels, and clearly that is a serious problem, but I hear something different from the DG, and that is that these are business people. They're not young students. Business people threatening institutions that they demand tenders and contracts, etc. Now that is looting of a grand scale, and it's threatening. It's aggressive behavior. I don't think we can ignore this. My question is, is the department using mechanisms that we have, the Corrupt Practices Act, all of that? We have to raise the alarm that this will not be tolerated. And that is my concern about. The minister referred to engaging with institutions to hear the ethos that they are sort of implementing on campus. Yes, that can help up to a certain point. But it's no good to have a specific arrangement to beef up institutional forums where people must engage, lovely, et cetera, but once out of the forum, and some of them don't go to the forum and raise the issues, or that if they're dissatisfied with the outcome of the forum, then they go out and they burn. But I still feel that we must differentiate between that which is unacceptable, and therefore we cannot agree with a sort of appeals for amnesty, etc. People who have done wrong things and have transgressed the law must face the full might of the law and must go through the processes. The Constitution does not guarantee protest action that turns ugly and aggressive. The Constitution only guarantees freedom of movement through protest action, but it must be peaceful and unarmed. That's what it says. Now, whether you're armed with a gun or a brick, you're armed. Just to get back to the issue of the tenders story, if this is becoming, and it has happened, I believe, maybe it was there, it was looming, but we've only recently become aware of the extent of it. So it is almost as though this past 5 years has really seen unacceptable conduct entrenched. And there's only one way, and that is to root it out. And we will have to call in, whether we meet together with the police committee or with the justice committee, but we will have to explain to them the extent of our concerns of what is happening on campus. And they will have to beef up intelligence of who are those instigators. Because we must get to the bottom of it. Yes, there are clearly networks of business people, but then there are also campus violence that is promoted through specific institutions, bodies, organizations, parties. Let's call it a spade a spade, political parties, by name the EFF. So we must not just pussyfoot about this thing, Jay. We must tackle it head on, and we must call a joint meeting on this matter. Thank you.
What's your language, Honorable? No, just before I give you an opportunity, Deputy Minister, Honorable Zoli, they are not exclusive. You see, they're not exclusive. You've got to have a system in place everywhere where people must take the responsibility that you meet regularly and you would deal with agenda points. Your meeting place can't be at a particular place. And my view is that most of these institutions don't have a strong something in place that lends itself to dialogue. There is no alternative to dialogue. You can bring all these police and so on, but you have to inculcate a sense in South Africa. By the way, our great liberation at the height of very many things came through dialogue. It didn't come through just doing other things. So I don't think we must compromise that on the altar. It must be there. But of course, honorable members, you take into consideration what is the status of many things at play, and you then deploy whatever else is necessary or that is required. And I would think, honorable members, it would be good for us to get a sense ourselves. We will not have the opportunity to go to all the institutions. I mean, our first is let's go and do oversight outside. We ask the speaker to let us get out here, and we apply to, you know, go to institutions instead of being here in Cape Town. I mean, that's one of our first port of calls. In the absence of all of that, we can ask all these institutions to explain to us a range of different things in the absence of us physically going there. So I think there's a multiple way of responding to what you and the minister have said, DG, on these things. I think you've adopted the UCT report yesterday, if I'm right. And I can tell you that the Vice-Chancellor has spoken to me, and she's pleading for us to come back because they're facing a multiple of problems here. We must not hide the UCT thing. I've seen that, you know, I've spoken to the Vice Chancellor. It's our duty, DG, to inculcate a range of different things. There was just a surface that we touched when we went to UCT the last time. But there's a cry for help. That Vice Chancellor is not going to last long if we don't do something at UCT also. We don't need to have another death at that place. But, honorable members, I want to remind you, before us we had many institutions where we saw how the boards were involved with on the management issues. You remember, what is it, MUT and all of them? They were here in front of us. The boards were involved in who must get the bricks, who must buy the sand, who must all of that. Now, we welcome the fact that the minister said she's going to deal with governance in these institutions, and we think that those things will help us also to get reports from yourself. But there's a morality problem. There's a morality problem in the country. So when a student takes 14 million rand, what are the response? Yay, she's been able to make it. Well done for her. That's how people responded to it. There wasn't a sense of saying, don't take what doesn't belong to you. Now she's facing the court, and her leadership is saying, we must ask for amnesty. And we must now, and then the Vice Chancellor said that we must counsel her, and you can't when somebody went to buy, I will continue to say, you can't when somebody decided to buy hair, Peru hair, and then the whiskey whose name I can't say, and then there were more things that came out in the court the other day. It was shocking. It was really shocking. In any case, I will go on and on and on about it. I think what we need to do is a range of different things. Yes, we must respond as a committee to all of these things. And yes, as a committee, we must say we are not happy with the state of play. there are more and more things that are threatening learning and teaching at these institutions, and that we will confer with very many different committees on whatever the different issue is, because the issue at Mpumalanga is a different one from lumping them together with other issues, and so we can continue with all the others. I think we just need to look at all of them and see what the different issues are at all the institutions, and then accordingly. But we must, the DG, appeal to you also, where they rear their head, we think you have to do something. I make the example, I was talking to the acting DGG in Gauteng. You can't have a college that just go on and on and on. I think I spoke to you also. You and I had a long discussion about it. Those are signs of, you know, this is where things are starting. And then at the level of certain institutional things, they just, this thing of boards is quite a thing, you know, and we must deal with it. We think that boards are only public enterprises. It's not. There are boards in many of you. Minister says the sitas are at each other's throat and so on. Doesn't matter what it is. It's access to resources that people are fighting for. Can I ask you to complete, Deputy Minister, or conclude?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just very briefly, there are issues which would obviously require that we build consensus, issues around the national plan for post-school, issues around the skills landscape, because we cannot do those without involving all the stakeholders. There are issues around the state of our institutions and the fact that we need to restore some levels of order. And you cannot do that without involving all the stakeholders, without, you know, a particular discourse. But I also agree that, you know, there are issues which are elements of criminality, outright criminality, and I think we need to deal with those differently, you know. The chair of council of DUT says to me that he's battling to persuade some of his senior managers to stay at DUT because they've been threatened. You know, they've been called into meetings, locked into boardrooms, told that this tender should go to this or that person, and, you know, and all of that. And that's the kind of situation that some of the senior managers you know, are being subjected to, and that's criminality, and I agree with you that we need to deal with that. You know, we know of instances where institutions were just on the verge of collapse, infrastructure couldn't move, you know, and all of that. One of the things which we, when we got into the department together with the minister, was Unizul, for instance. You know, so you have all of these issues at play that, you know, some would require discourse, dialogue, engagement, and all of that, but others would require, or should be dealt with, you know, as matters of criminality. Our first prize, in order for us to have stability in institutions, is for systems to work, is for, you know, students to get their allowances, their bursaries on time and all of that, is to put in place preventative measures which will result in people not going on strike and all of that, and therefore resulting into, you know, vandalizing of property. But in cases where there are grievances, we always appeal, you know, to students to protest in a peaceful manner and not to destroy property. You know, we drag the DG and some of the staff to all of these hotspots and say, let's talk, let's engage, let's see what, you know, and I'm sure the college you're referring to is CJC, Central Johannesburg.
Or Citibank. Oh, the Citibank also, yes. You know, we go there, we say, let's get people around the table. Let's try and see how we can help resolve, you know, all these matters. But rightly so, in instances where, you know, criminal elements are at play, we think the law should take its course. And then I think the other issues around youth unemployment, we fully agree, you know, Honorable Kekana, that you know, our institutions must play that role of ensuring that young people, you know, are given the necessary skills, employable, self-employed, and all of that. And I think that's part of the two presentation at the core of that, with regard to skills and with regards to how our post-school education and training institutions should be, is addressing the question of, you know, of youth unemployment and all of that. So I think we essentially agree, and we really think and hope that through your efforts, Chair and the committee, that we, you know, can collectively be able to deal with some of these issues. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, honourable members. We let's thank the department also. There are just two matters, honourable members. Thank you very much. We got the Government Gazette, honourable members. I think you've got copies also of it. Those that don't, let's make sure we'll give it to you. But you've got the Government Gazette now on the administrator at NASFIS. Then the second issue is, honourable members, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. I've been invited to be outside of the country next week, and you are asked to elect a acting chair next week. And the chairperson will come back and report to you on... It's a sort of a Commonwealth thing on Tivet colleges, which you will like quite a lot, on Tivet college issues from around the continent. So, sorry, what is the DG saying? The DG is moving that we don't have any meeting next week, that's what he's saying. They wake up only when I'm back. So, honourable members, honourable Wolmerens?
Not Chair. In can we already deal with the matter in the light of your invitation? I would strongly propose that we nominate Honorable Kekana as the acting chair, whilst you are away.
Going up in Tunu. What is Honorable Bazoli intimidating you? You are protected from Honorable Bazoli. Mkunu. So,
I won't be here tomorrow.
No, thank you, Chair. Democratic Alliance behave.
I second the nomination of Comrade Kekana, but next time, Honorable Bazoli, no, we'll think about it.
So, Honorable Bazoli, they said they'll think about it, but for now, there's no seconder for you to nominate yourself. There's no such a thing. Honorable members, I have no other reason to keep you here. But to thank you very much for the meeting, DG and the Deputy Minister, thank you very much. All of you may take leave of the meeting.